now. Detonate the reality bomb!
Change has come to America.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know,
catapults of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
You may well be allowing people into your child's bedroom that you would not allow past the front door of your house. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert, our guest. And in the interest of full disclosure, this audio has been, repurposed from a couple of shorter interviews that we conducted at Skywatch TV just about a week ago. But the message is important enough that I feel it's worth bringing to you again. If you missed those interviews on Skywatch TV, that's what you'll be hearing here. But she will be a guest on two full-length episodes of Skywatch TV, the network program, in the month of June, as well as a couple of web exclusives on the Skywatch TV channels on Roku and YouTube. She works to rescue children from child prostitution, child pornography, and perhaps worse. She coordinates with and trains law enforcement in tracking and apprehending the perpetrators of these horrific crimes. She's the president and CEO of MillionKids.org and the outreach coordinator for the Riverside County, California Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force. It is our honor to welcome Opal Singleton back to the program.
Thank you, Jerry.
This is such a big topic, human trafficking, the exploitation of teens. We'll just focus today on just one aspect of it that I think will shock a lot of our viewers, which is the use of social media by predators who are accessing our children and our grandchildren through devices like this one that our kids, like every kid in America over the age of 10 practically has a smartphone these days. And we as parents and grandparents grew up in a totally different era. How are predators using social media to get to our kids?
Well, first of all, thank you for letting me join you today. This is such an important topic, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to parents and grandparents in your audience. I work in human trafficking. I work with the Riverside County Sheriff Department, so I sit with parents who are looking for their kids. I sit with kids who are in trouble, and I'm involved in real cases. This is an absolute epidemic, not only just human trafficking, but child exploitation, having to do with kids who hook up with the wrong person on the internet. So kind of let me set the background for you for a minute. If you think about this, we really are at a unique time in history. We have never, ever been here before. We have a generation of young people who have never not known the internet. Now, you know, their older brothers and sisters knew the internet, but they didn't have the devices 24/7. This generation has more access to the entire world than any other generation before us. That means that the parents and the grandparents to this generation have responsibilities and need for education like never before. You know, now, their older brothers and sisters knew the internet, but they didn't have these devices 24/7. Statistics indicate that 87% of kids sleep with their phone. Hmm. In fact, almost every one of us take our phone to the bathroom with us, and some of them have lost it in the toilet, okay? So we're like married to these devices, and it absolutely changed everything. But if you think about this a minute, the FBI said there are nearly a million predators online at any given time. That is absolutely huge. We used to tell kids, don't take candy from strangers. Now we're handing them the candy that meets the stranger. In fact, if you hand your child a device, let's say they're 10 or 12 years old, and they're really good on it, they'll meet more strangers in a week than you and I have known in a lifetime. And so we need to think out what is actually happening. Truthfully, what is happening here that ends in human trafficking is this concept of grooming. And grooming doesn't work like most parents think. You know, most parents will think, well, a predator will call their kid or send their kid an email or maybe a text message, and that kid will go, wow, this guy's a creep, and they walk away. but it doesn't work that way. What will happen is they'll often send an instant message. KIK is the biggest one, K-I-K. It's the one where we have most of our cases with that. And what will happen, in fact, maybe I should tell your audience here, I did a survey of a high school in Southern California, where I'm from. In that high school, 80% of the kids were on KIK. 80% of them had received a message from a stranger, which, by the way, is why they're on there. They like that. 50% of the kids replied to that stranger, and 3 went out and met a total stranger. So the odds of them being violated are just huge. What will happen is this guy will send her something cute and funny, and she wants to be coy, so she sends something cute and funny back, and pretty soon they're sending text messages, they text, they tweet, they send an Instagram, they share a YouTube, maybe they meet on Facebook or Pinterest, and then, hey, let's play Xbox. And so night after night, they can't wait to get home. They've got a new friend. They're playing this game. And mom and dad are saying, hey, don't talk to strangers on there.
It's not a stranger.
It's not a stranger.
This is my Xbox partner.
Yes, yeah. That's right. And they become loyal. If you think about it, in playing a game, you need their approval. You're a team. And so you become loyal. It is a grooming incubator. And this is how it's happening. And we are seeing, just last week, I received 8 leads on cases like this. We're seeing cases where kids are sneaking out in the middle of night, meeting up with a total stranger, and then it turns out, it always turns out that it isn't who they think it is, and they end up being violated. In this particular case, she thought he was 16 and from the San Diego area. It turned out to be 27 and a registered sex offender. Now, the end result of that can be catastrophic. You know, they can be tricked into being taken away and put into prostitution, being groomed, being violated. It gets really, really bad.
The sad thing is it's not even limited to young teens or preteens who are victimized by this. There was a story just this week of a young lady at University of Kansas, 18 years old, who met a gentleman who was 30 over Tinder, another social
dating site.
Right. And he basically held her captive for 6 days and beat her and abused her horribly. And we kind of recognize this in our daughter. My wife and I met over the internet very early. Only 20% of America was on the internet. We met via the internet, and praise God, 18 years later, this is...
You got lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think God had a hand in this. But we recognized 15 years ago, when our daughter was still young, she was on a site for raising virtual pets, and there was a chat feature enabled. And we recognized early on that not all of the players in that game, in that virtual world, were necessarily who they said they were. But again, 15 years ago, she didn't have access to a handheld device like this. We understand that our worldview is shaped by the media that we absorb. And when I was a kid in Chicago, we had 7 television stations and 2 were UHF, basically worthless. Yeah. But Dad controlled the TV.
That's right.
That window to the world was off at bedtime, and that was it. How is constant access to the internet changing the views of our children on things like morality, sexuality, spirituality?
Absolutely. Everything you said is just right on the money. The truth is that even when we had our first computers, they were in the living room. But now we're giving very young kids access. I always say it's kind of like handing your child a bottle of vodka and say, carry this around for 4 or 5 years and don't open it, you know. We saw a case not too long ago. A wonderful Christian couple decided to give their 11-year-old daughters, they were twins, the devices. They gave them all the warnings, you know, and they're checking that phone all the time. But, you know, parents get busy. And one day she went to take a photograph with her daughter's phone, and she saw her flinch. And so she started through the gallery, the photo gallery, and sure enough, she had been sexting to a 35-year-old in Iowa. Now, she's a regular kid. There's nothing wrong with this kid. It's just she's 11. She doesn't have the structural devices to think this out. And so it's changed absolutely everything because you have so much access. You know, the FBI says that there are nearly a million predators online at any given time. There are right now over 3.5 billion internet users. In fact, I read recently they're expecting in 2020 to have the entire world connected by the internet. So one of the differences of when, for instance, you met your wife when this first happened, now this is global and there are massive amounts of information of countries and people on it. And the technology's advanced where you can connect in groups, you can connect, you can geo-track right back to where they're at, you know, you can instant message going back and forth, and it's just something funny, and so you don't see it as any, you're not intending to hook up with it, you don't realize what's happening, and so technology isn't good or bad. Let me clarify something about that. I'm not against technology. It's changed our lives, and it is here to stay. And, you know, as we talk over time, we'll talk about some of the new technologies and how exciting they are, but how scary they are if we don't prepare ourselves. One of the things that I wrote about my book that I think is really, really important is for a parent to be able to cross any chasm. In fact, I'll share with you an experience I had. I do a lot of church conferences. And in this conference, it was a fascinating thing. All the parents sat on one side and all the kids sat on the other. It's like they weren't speaking. I don't know what was going on there. But I said to the parents, I said, now, what social media are you on? And they were on Instagram, Facebook. One was crushing candy, and I'm not kidding. One was playing in Farmville. So I said to the kids, now, what are you on? They were on Tango, Tinder, Tumblr, Uvu, Omegle, and Poof. It was like a foreign language. And this is one of the things that led me to write the book, because I realized we have this generation of kids who have all the power, all the knowledge, all the access to the entire world. Then we have a generation of parents and grandparents who are technophobic. Quite frankly, some are techno-impotent. Mm-hmm. And so they can't cross that e-chasm. And so this is really what it's all about. The book is really all about how to talk to your child and sit down and cross that e-chasm together. You see, you'll see as we talk throughout the time here, I am a strong believer that we are, as Christians especially, are well past the stage of wanting to raise happy little children, and it is time to raise strong, moral, spiritual leaders. Because how this generation handles this time in history, and I believe that we have entered an entire new time in history. These are exciting days to live through for our kids and for us as parents and grandparents, because how we handle that and understanding Christianity and morality and having God-centered, directed approaches to our interactions will literally set the stage for generations to come. So this is an important time to be a teenager, but it's really important time to be a parent and a grandparent and recognize the responsibility that comes with that, but more important, recognize the opportunity that comes to that. Mm-hmm.
And it means there will be some times where, as a parent, you'll have to make decisions that will make your children very unhappy with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The idea that a video game, that an online video game would be an avenue into our homes for predators is startling. How does that work?
It's an interesting thing that is happening here, because many people don't realize how much males are being violated. When we talk about human trafficking, usually we talk about girls. But I work in human trafficking out in Southern California. And what we're seeing is many, many cases of guys that get involved in sextortion. That word is sex and extortion, sextortion. It's basically blackmail by a photo. So let's talk about video games for a minute, because it's a fascinating thing that's happening. First of all, let me explain to your audience how a video game really works, as far as they may not realize it from a standpoint of grooming. In other words, most people think if you can take your child, for instance, to a movie, you might see a movie and it's violent and it's sexual, and it's happening to that character, and you take it and you take your child and you go home. Maybe you see that movie two or three times. But what happens in a video game is your child is living vicariously through an avatar. They're often in a world that is based on the occult, by the way. If you've not taken the time, look at World of Warcraft. That's all about the occult and sorcery. I'm always blown away by that, quite frankly, Derek. I mean, think about this. How many times in your life would you actually say, okay, child, go ahead and play in the world of occult and sorcery. Yeah. It's fine with me.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, because so much animation is taking place anymore, so much virtual reality, we don't think about it. So it's in a world of occult and sorcery, and then we add some animated pornography to it. And so already this kid is in there, their score's going up, they're in there and they're playing a game of sex and of violence. And then we open the door for total strangers that are talking to that child, and that child needs the approval of those strangers.
Now, these are games that are connected to through the internet, so they can play with other players, the so-called, what, MMORPG, massive
right.
online role-playing games.
Yeah. That's right. Games like Grand Theft Auto, Black Ops, World of Warcraft, all of those kinds of things. And that is important. In fact, let me make that very clear to your audience. I'm not against gaming. In fact, gaming will be used by all of our schools. You know, that's how kids learn. You'll see a three-year-old walking around with a little screen and a game. Mm-hmm. Try to take that screen away from that kid. Good luck to you. You know, they're already addicted at three. But where I go into a problem is, think about, we're giving our kids that are 10, 11, 12, 13, they're going through puberty. You know, their frontal lobe hasn't knitted together yet. They're not going to have good cognitive reasoning skills for another 3, 4, 5 years, depending if they're male or female. So it's kind of a fascinating thing that we put these kids in this world where they can talk to others and they need that approval. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you where this really goes wrong is that this is kind of based a little bit on child pornography, because quite frankly, child pornographers have developed these large-scale rings in what we call the dark web down inside the internet in the areas. If you think of the internet as a bucket of water, that top 75% is kind of where we play with the search engines and like that. But that bottom dark web is where pornographers, cartels, money launderers, people like that play. Well, they get in on these rings and they share these photographs of our kids who are sending out naked photographs. Well, what has happened, and the reason we know about this, is there's new technology called photo DNA. Mm. And so every email that you send out is scanned for the image of a naked child. When they see that, they send that back to National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Since they've started doing that, NCMEC has reported that they've intercepted 158 million images of naked children. But here's what is important is one-fourth of those images, 35 million of those images, are sent by our kids themselves. Our kids sending their naked selfie off to a friend. So how does this work for a guy? Well, let's suppose you have a 13-year-old kid, and he's playing, let's say, World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And he's in there, and he's shooting it up, and he's having a great time. And you know, his score is going up, and he's seeing a little sex and a little violence, and the team's going, way to go. And all of a sudden, this cute little girl joins the deal. She's about 12 or 13, maybe 14, and you're going, wow, my lucky day. A girl who plays World of Warcraft, and she thinks I'm hot. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of a nerd. And so you get all excited. You can't wait to get home from school and play every day. You talk to her. She talks to you. You go back and forth. You're having a great time. Your score is going up. And everything's great. And one day, she drops her naked photo on you. Whoa, what do you do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, I don't know what to do with this. And then she's going, I sent you mine. Give me yours. And yeah. You're like, no, I don't do that. Yeah, but I gave you mine. And pretty soon, one day, you just shoot yourself in all your wonderful glory, and you send it off to her. But it really turns out to be a him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a guy. It's a predator. An ugly predator, usually.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who can't get anybody else, and now he's preying on kids. And he takes that photograph, and he puts that out on a child pornography ring. I'm going to tell you, your son will change. Because all of a sudden, he's getting texts, he's getting emails, he's getting hundreds of men trying to contact him. They run his IP address, they know how to reach him, and they begin to blackmail him. This is sextortion. You know, hey, I think I know where you live. Hey, I want some money. You know, hey, I want to come over. I got some stuff I want to do to your body.
Hmm.
You know, I'm going to send this off to the school. I'm going to show your parents. I'm going to put it on Facebook. You are ruined. And this child is trapped, and he's trapped in a damaged goods trap. This is why we wrote the book Seduced, is we want parents and grandparents to understand A video game is not a regular video game if it has a chat room. In fact, it is a grooming incubator where you have introduced your child, as exactly what you said, you have introduced your child to people that you would never allow in your living room.
Hmm. The percentage of young men that are lured into this is startling. I presume this happens with young women as well. What should parents look for? Let's broaden this out. What kind of changes personality-wise should parents or grandparents look for that might help them identify this as a cause?
Shame changes a person's perception of themselves.
It does.
I often find it interesting that there seems to be like a distance about this far between sex and the soul. Out of all the bodily functions, it will change your perception of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of our young people, because what a predator does is trap them. So all of a sudden, the common characteristics, now guys and girls will process shame differently. Guys will shut down. They'll just go deep, deep quiet. Now, I often think about the stories that you hear about the guys who were violated by the Catholic members of the Catholic Church. And what happened there is some of those guys couldn't talk for 20 years. They will go deep quiet and they can't tell. Now, a girl will be a little bit different. They become very emotional because they're traumatized. They may start cutting, but usually everything starts blow up, a cry, you know, they won't talk.
Minor issues, things that normally wouldn't set them off.
Now, on a girl, mom and dad are saying, is this girl pregnant or is she on drugs? I mean, what's going on here? You know they need counseling, but you're not sure what's going on. They don't have the ability to tell you. They are trapped in that damaged goods box. Now, they may go to school, but not stay. They'll come back because they're like, somebody knows. Somebody's going to find out. Has that photo? Has somebody told somebody already?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll come back. You'll see they're not sleeping. And they'll begin to run away. In fact, there's something in the human trafficking business that is called the high-risk victims of trafficking model. It was developed out of Dallas, Texas, by the way, with a task force there. And they say that if a child runs away three times, they're probably in the life of prostitution, meaning they have been trapped into shame-based behavior, believing that they're just, you know, not redeemable. And if anybody knew what happened to them. And so that's what parents need to watch for. Now, while we're sharing this, let me share with you the antidote to that. Because when you see a child change like that, your first thing is to just look at them and go, what the heck are you thinking? You know?
Yeah.
But that just drives them farther down. You see a child like that, stop and put your arm around them and say, you know, I don't know what's going on here. If you want to tell me, good. If not, I'm okay. But whatever it is, God is going to forgive you. And I am going to forgive you. And we are going to get through this together.
Mm-hmm.
You are not alone. And that's the most important thing that you can do with that child is recognize that change in behavior, get them counseling, of course, and quickly, but stand beside them and let them know that you believe in them.
Mm. I heard a very wise evangelist once at a conference for men say that the family is the smallest battle formation in the spiritual war in which we're all deployed. And that's why the enemy spends so much time and effort trying to destroy it, because once we no longer have the support of our fellow soldiers, if we're broken apart, separated from our unit, we are easier to destroy. And it's clear that the enemy is using the most powerful instincts and urges built into our biology by God to accomplish those ends.
Isn't that's powerful what you just said. I have not heard that before, but in some of our other segments when we talk, we're going to talk about some of the other new technologies around. And it's almost like we're in a technological Armageddon that we're headed into without really being cognitive of what the world that we're living in, the impact that it has on the soul and the brain and our children's lives and future. And so that's a powerful statement.
Hmm. And it's almost like we're going into battle armed with spears and slings against a team armed with the most high-tech weapons available to military. Well, Opal Singleton will be featured in a couple of very powerful episodes of Skywatch TV during the month of June. Make sure you watch for that. Her website, millionkids.org, and the book is Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers.
I'll put a link to Opal's website, a link to the website for her book, Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers, and also a link to her new program, on Voice of America, which you can link to and archive at your website, your church's website. She's encouraging that so that your church can build an archive of information about fighting human trafficking. In fact, we will probably start doing this at A View from the Bunker just because, again, I think this is so important. As the father of a young lady, you know, she's in her mid-20s now, but this hits really close to home. We had a very scary incident when she was about six, seven, thereabouts. She might have been a couple of years older than that. The victim of the crime I'm describing was six, young girl who went who lived in the town just south of us, about 3 miles away, went to visit a friend just up the street, a couple houses away. She never made it. Her body was found later stuffed into a concrete culvert. And it took some time for police to apprehend the perpetrator. And of course, that was some scary times because then as a parent of a young girl, and at that age, they have no concept of danger, no concept of a stranger, somebody with a friendly face, a smile, is safe in their world. And would that it were so. But that is not the case in the world in which we live. So it hits kind of close to home, hearing about children who are victimized in this way. But of course, the victims, as you learn from Opal, are not always children of that age. Sometimes they're older, 13, 14, 16, older. I don't recall if I mentioned during the interview, but not long ago, within the last 2 weeks, story hit the news here about a young lady at University of Kansas up in Lawrence, 18, 19 years old, had arranged for a date through the social media app called Tinder. It is a dating app. Allows you to set up dates and hookups and so forth. And she met a guy, turned out to be 30, took her back to his trailer where he kept her imprisoned for about a week, 6 days, beat her badly. Horrible situation. So even teens who are technically adults and old enough to know better can be victimized by things like this. And it is our duty as parents and grandparents to make our children and grandchildren aware of this, to protect them from it, even if it means intruding in what they believe to be their private space. Sorry, young lady, while you're under my roof, you can have some privacy, but I still exercise my right as the sheepdog of the family to step in and check. Because kids believe that they're smart enough to, well, smarter than their parents. And that things that they're engaging in, because as the way Opal puts it, their hormonal and their frontal lobes aren't properly developed, they will do things that you and I, you just make us, our stomachs twist in horror. But of course, when I was that age, I did things like that too. So, she does good work, and her work is essential. So we pray for Opal and her ministry. MillionKids.org is the website. The book, again, Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers. A couple of stories to bring to the fore here. Well, of course, the big story last week was the downing of that Egypt Air flight MS-804, which fell into the Mediterranean about 180 miles north of Alexandria. Probably terrorism. But as I record this on Sunday, May 22nd, the black box hasn't been recovered yet, and there's no definite word from any government authority that that is the case. In fact, U.S. government was saying within the last 2-3 days that there was no evidence of terror. Now, the Egyptian government believes that that is the case. What's curious is that normally in a terrorism attack of this sort, a group is all too happy, one group or another, all too happy to step forward and claim credit for something like this. And that hasn't happened yet, which means either it was a mechanical failure, which would be unlikely, or it is a new tactic in the war by groups like the Islamic State against the rest of against the civilized world. So we'll wait and see how that all plays out. But Evidence does suggest some explosive on the plane. That hasn't been confirmed yet. Things are heating up in Iraq as the Iraqi government is finally, and we've been hearing about this for a year now, the imminent campaign to retake Mosul, which is the city in northern Iraq that's become sort of the de facto capital for the Islamic State. The group is deploying some tactics to shore up morale among its soldiers that you won't find in any business manual or self-help book. ISIS apparently going out of its way to terrorize the citizens of Mosul to stay put and not try to flee, but they've been doing the same thing to their own soldiers. A couple of weeks ago, multiple sources reported that ISIS was freezing defectors to death, 45 men frozen inside the storage lockers at the morgue in Mosul. No doubt a very painful, horrifying death for those. Apparently, that attempt to bolster morale didn't work, and so now they've taken to burying defectors alive. Multiple sources this week saying that a number of men were buried for fleeing the battlefield against Iraqi soldiers in the Nineveh plain. Apparently, the motto of the Islamic State is the executions will continue until morale improves. But we shall see what happens. There's also a new initiative apparently about to get underway to retake the city of Fallujah, which has been sort of a hub of the rebellion against the Shia-dominated government in Iraq for a couple of years now. There are a couple of things that concern observers about this. First of all, most of the troops that are preparing to invade Fallujah, and by the way, this also includes Hezbollah troops. There's a video posted to a Hezbollah YouTube channel that shows a convoy of Hezbollah fighters heading for Fallujah. They are Shia, of course. Most of the militia groups, including the group headed up by Muqtada al-Sadr, which is preparing to fight in Mosul, not Fallujah, but many of the troops on the ground in Iraq that are fighting against the Islamic State are Shia militia groups, which not long ago were shooting at U.S. soldiers. That's one of the areas of concern here. We already have, we know for a fact, U.S. Marines on the ground near Mosul. They've set up a forward, what are they calling it, a firebase. And a Marine was killed there by Islamic troops, just Islamic State troops just a couple of weeks ago. So, and we also know that the U.S. Air Force regularly carries out airstrikes in the Fallujah corridor to support Iraqi government operations there. So, putting two and two together, are we going to have the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Marines, perhaps U.S. Special Forces, Delta Force troops, fighting in support of Iraqi Shia militia groups that were formerly shooting at them? Is the U.S. Air Force going to be flying airstrikes, missions in support of Hezbollah? And if so, should they? That's the first thing that concerns me. Second thing is this. The population of Fallujah is predominantly Sunni, and it is possible, given the history of the way things have been fought in Iraq, that if and when Shia troops overrun the 800 or so Islamic State fighters in Fallujah, will the Shia militia units feel entitled to take revenge, payback, against the Sunni residents of the city? That is entirely possible, and it does not bode well for peace in Iraq anytime soon. There was an interesting meeting that took place at Harvard University not long ago, within the last couple of weeks. About 150 scientists were invited. They were told to keep this on the QT, not to tell the press, not to tweet about the meeting from the meeting. This is about the creation of a new research group. Three organizers, one from Harvard University, one from New York University, and the third a self-described futurist from Autodesk. That's a company that makes AutoCAD software, computer-aided design software. The name of the group originally proposed was, let's see if I can find it here so I don't have to try to rely on my memory. Since I've not been upgraded, it's not perfect. The Human Genome Synthesis Project, the Human Genome Synthesis Project, which is just what the name describes. They want to take chemicals to synthesize a complete human genome within 10 years. By the time the meeting was held, somebody had suggested that perhaps critics like, well, me, would see a red flag there and perhaps direct unwanted attention toward the group. So they've changed the name of the group to HGP Wright, W-R-I-T-E, HGP Wright, Testing Large Synthetic Genomes in Cells. That sounds a lot less ominous than the human Genome Synthesis Project. George Church, Dr. George Church, the gentleman from Harvard University who's part of this three-man team organizing this, says that the project doesn't have funding yet, although they've approached some groups and some foundations, some companies, and they reportedly are seeing some interest. And of course they would. Because if they can synthesize the human genome, presumably they believe they can improve on the genome. Why would they synthesize a human genome that codes for early onset diabetes or breast cancer or, you know, flat feet for that matter? Why wouldn't they try to improve it? They want to create the Ubermensch. They want to create humanity 2.0 in the lab. And the goal is to do it within the next 10 years. The other organizers, Jeff, I'm going to say, guess, Boeke, B-O-E-K-E. He's director of the Institute for Systems Genetics at NYU. And Andrew Hessel, who's the fellow at Autodesk. And he's the one who first proposed this idea back in 2012. So keep an eye on this. We'll be watching it, of course. This is why Skywatch TV and Defender Films put together the documentary Inhuman, The Next and Final Phase of Man is Here, which, by the way, you may know because we've mentioned this on Skywatch TV. The film was awarded a Silver Telly this year. The Telly Awards is an annual award handed out to video presentations for televised works and non-televised works. You have to submit the work along with a fee, of course, and the works are adjudicated by previous winners of the Silver Telly. This year, if I remember correctly, there were something like 13,000 entries. I may have that wrong. I know that, anyway, fewer than 10%, according to the Telly Awards, are awarded the Silver Telly. It's basically you're not trying to win the category. You're just being adjudicated as to whether you achieve a certain level of production quality. And so kudos to those responsible for it. Joe Artis, director Gans Shimura, Donna Howell, and Sharon for the script, and Sharon, of course, for the narration of the film. Yeah, so it was over 13,000 entries, and fewer than 10% were awarded the Silver Telly. So Inhuman, the documentary, a recipient of the Silver Telly for excellence, and congratulations to those who were a part of it. I just moved some levers back and forth, some knobs on the soundboard occasionally, my humble contribution, but it's an important topic, and that's really the important thing to remember about this film, because there are some very intelligent people backed by some very big money who've made it their life's work to redesign and improve what it means to be human. A couple of other quick things. Here in Missouri, we keep an eye on this because, well, we like to be prepared for all eventualities. I will say this, most of us at Skywatch TV have qualified for and most already possess a concealed carry permit. But here, the legislature a week ago, at the what they're calling an 11th hour bill, it was passed on the final day of the legislative session, passed a bill that would eliminate the permitting requirement to carry a concealed firearm in the state of Missouri. In other words, once you are eligible to own a firearm, you can carry it on your person as a concealed weapon without having to have a permit. It also expands the protections of the Castle Doctrine, which means that if you're inside a home and somebody breaks in, you can defend yourself with lethal force. You have the right to do so under the law. Previously, that law applied only to the owner or residents of the home. Now, this protection is extended to house guests as well. So if somebody's visiting from out of town and somebody breaks into the house, they too can defend themselves. And it's also put the stand your ground doctrine into law. That is the belief that if you're in a public place and somebody, you reasonably believe that somebody is a legitimate threat to your life, you can defend yourself with lethal force. You don't have to retreat first before resorting to defending yourself with lethal force. Frankly, I'm amazed that there's any places in America where you are required to run away. If somebody attacks you, that the law says you have to run away before you can turn around and defend yourself. I mean, if somebody's threatening your life, you have to run first. And then once you've established that you've run and can't run anymore, then you can turn around and defend yourself with lethal force. Well, anyway, the legislature here passed it by a veto-proof majority if the votes hold in the legislature. 114-36 in the House, 24-8 in the Senate. Democratic Governor Jay Nixon has until mid-July to reply. He may veto the bill, but if the vote holds as it did in the legislature, that would be overturned. So we'll see how that goes. If you live in South Florida and you don't have enough to worry about with the threat of hurricanes from the Gulf or from the Atlantic Ocean or from Burmese pythons that have been introduced into South Florida, you've now got Nile crocodiles to worry about. Researchers have confirmed that three crocodiles, Nile crocodiles, have been positively ID'd from their DNA captured around Miami in recent years. There are two big questions. First of all, question number one, how did they get to Florida? I mean, Nile crocodiles, they're from Africa. They didn't swim over. A couple of possibilities. Large reptile collectors turned them loose because they couldn't care for them properly. They may have escaped from animal shows, perhaps. Or perhaps somebody just brought them over and then released them into the Everglades deliberately. The reason Nile crocodiles are a concern, of course, is that because the males can grow up to 16 feet long, weigh over 1,600 pounds, and they're responsible for about 200 deaths per year in Africa. Just for a frame of reference, in an average year, the number of people who die from shark attacks worldwide, 6. So there's that. Second question, of course, is I see in this story that they were captured in 2009, 2011, and 2014. So why did it take so long to tell people that these animals captured, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago were Nile crocodiles? Anyway, just another reason to staycation or come to the Ozarks, where we got lots of armadillos, but not a single crocodile. Coming up on A View from the Bunker, well, frankly, I don't have a schedule in front of me because I'm still in the process of sending out some notes. Mike Heiser will be here in the Ozarks this coming week, and hopefully we'll have enough time to pull him into the studio to do a recording. He's been putting out some really interesting programs on his Naked Bible podcast recently, so I want to pick his brain about some of these things. Maybe we can get him there. And I've got a couple of fellows who've sent me books of theirs, and I owe them the courtesy of getting back in touch to set up interviews. So we will see where this goes. But if all goes well, we'll have a discussion with Mike Heiser by next Sunday. The Gilbert House Fellowship, our weekly Bible study, is getting interesting. We're getting into the history of the rule of King David in the Old Testament and then the New Testament. We just got to the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So the passion of Jesus coming up in the next few weeks on the Gilbert House Fellowship. It's a weekly Bible study, 1 hour each, give or take, on Old and New Testament, and we post it every Sunday at gilberthouse.org. Skywatch TV this coming week. The conversation continues with Tom Horn and Chris Putnam about their new book, The Final Roman Emperor, the Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Last Crusade. That book coming out at the end of May. The first week's interview with Tom and Chris broadcast this past week, but you can find it on the Skywatch TV YouTube channel and Roku channel. Beginning tomorrow, the second interview goes to the Roku channel and will be broadcast multiple times in the coming week, and you'll find those listings, dates and times, and places at skywatchtv.com. Look in the top menu bar there for channels, and you'll find the links there. Give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you pull down a view from the bunker. We sure appreciate it. And we discuss the issues mentioned here at the View from the Bunker page on Facebook. And we'd appreciate you giving us a like there. Got to work hard to keep up with Into the Multiverse with Josh Peck. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. And we do this because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.